Ćirića, Venus Books and Books.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And as I just had to turn up the mic, and I hope everyone, what a cracking day out there. Just quickly, Auckland weather. Well, today, fine, a chance of showers this afternoon. So, southerlies turning into a nor'easterly around midday. That high of 21, a low of 12. Tomorrow, obviously, the Auckland Marathon. A lot of people will be keeping an eye on this. This especially for the weather. Fine, easterlies easing in the evening. And a high of 21, a low of 12. Wow, it's going to be a great weekend. And as we do, we've got a big weekend of rugby coming up. And this is proudly brought to you by Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD, opposite the iconic Civic Theatre. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottle beers. They have fine wines, good spirits, great food and music, Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to if you're heading to a show or in at the Civic or at the Town Hall. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, we talk about a rugby, and here to join us, former All Black, a regular on the show, AJ Whitten. Good morning to you, mate.
Yeah, good morning, and beautiful day it is. Good day to be able to sit back, relax, and to watch other teams play international footy. I've just had a quick text from Fenton Little and her mobile, Tigger and Puds.
Yep.
Marlo and Birdie, mate, we're all here. And we're going to be watching international rugby for the next 4 weeks. How good is that?
I think it's going to be fantastic. And yep, it's going to be a good weekend to start it off with. And, of course, we're going to talk about it. 9 a.m. tomorrow morning in Chicago, the All Blacks versus Ireland. Now, 9 years ago, as you know, when I was, you know, coming, as you know, I was a very much a minor superstar over there, but
this point, how you've grown.
Yeah, well, grown out. Yeah, grown out. But it's a sold-out Soldier Field. This is huge. Now, I look at the All Blacks, obviously, Ethan de Groot's back, Bowden Barrett's back, Caleb Clark's back on the wing. The Irish, you know, they've got Jack Cowley at first 5'8". It's been very, very good. What do the All Blacks need to do, AJ? Let's break it down here, because the All Blacks were very settled and everything. This Irish side, and it's we know more about Irish rugby than we did in 2016, because we play them so often. They've got a settled pack. What does the All Blacks need to do to break down that Irish pack?
Yeah, it's they've got the game obviously over in the States for various reasons, obviously commercially, and also for the highlighting the game there with the impending World Cup in 4, 5, 6 years' time. So, gained ground early, as I heard the whisper on the ground. So, interesting match. The All Blacks, you know, after their victories over Australia, certainly have got to cement that momentum. Coming against a very competent side in the Irish, and with the luxury of knowing that they've beaten the All Blacks here previously, but maybe just a bit short on game fitness. They've had a break, of course, with the British and Irish Lions touring, the mandatory stand down. And, of course, they're coming in maybe a wee bit underdone. So, look, I'm picking the All Blacks. a couple of players you've mentioned have come back in from injuries or certainly had the impact. You've got a settled last row there with Parker. Lakai now is taking his opportunities with Sarvia, who I prefer at seven. Ben yeah. Roygaard, of course, we know as the conductor. He's just got to carry on his confidence, his personality on the field. I think it's quite contagious. With Barrett there, you've got a very settled back line to pair. Well, to Pryor, why not? He's certainly earned his spot. So, look, it's going to be a class, 62,500 at Soldier Field. Most of it will be Irish, probably with a few under their belt. All the momentum, I think, will be too strong for the All Blacks, and I'm expecting a win, a tight one, but I just think they're just a better prep for this match.
You know what, I think, you're right, because the Irish haven't played any internationals, and when I look at this Irish side, it's a very good side. I look at that forward pack, fantastic. The back line, really experienced. But I also see that... Maybe some of them have gone on, maybe are looking towards 2027, but it is an ageing side, and whether some of them have gone on a year too long after the World, after the 2023 World Cup, we don't know, but it is going to be very interesting. I think the All Blacks will win. Obviously, the big media promo will be, we're revenging 2016, which is a whole lot of rubbish, to be honest with you, AJ. You get sick of hearing it every time. Oh, we're revenging this. We're revenging that. Just get on and play. But I think the All Blacks, not by much. I believe that it's going. I think they're just going to have that too much match fitness. And I have to say, there's going to be some interesting matches. Looking forward to it, AJ. I've been invited to a champagne breakfast, so I'm
I'll make sure you don't peak too early. But look, it's important for the All Blacks on the other side, is they're embarking on a Grand Slam tour. So your first match, it becomes a priority. You've got to start on the right foot, and that's with a W. So I think there's just a bit more to play for. Just got to keep calm. They should have some confidence there. Getting to a settled 15-23, bar injuries. Quite a good bench to pull on. So, I just hope that the boys know what's at stake, and they've just got to start on the right foot, which is a win over Ireland.
Absolutely. Well, we also look at earlier in the morning as a bit of a curtain raiser for the All Blacks in New Zealand, the All Blacks 15 versus the Barbarians at Brentford Community Stadium in London. Now, I've looked at the side, and it's a really, it's got a bit of experience, but they're going for a bit of youth, guys, that giving guys an opportunity to see how far they are from making that step up.
Yeah, looks like a Barbarian side that's stacked full of South Africans, because you know they're touring, so maybe a warm-up for both. And we all know that they're all on standby for injuries. Great to give the next crop an opportunity, but certainly there, if things turn a wee bit to custard and they can call on players to fill their ranks. So, yep, an opportunity. Take it. Some good guys there that have earned their a place to wear the jersey. I'll be interested to see how Flanders goes there with Boshia. Very experienced there with Papali'i, of course, an All Black who's come back to captain the side. Very prominent names. We've just finished our MPC, so they are not new to us. We know what they can do. Xavier Rowe at number 9, I think, is very important. We've got Josh Jacobs there. We know he's played at a certain level. So there's a lot of experience there also, Piggy. So certainly going in there with some confidence, but they're going to have to work hard, especially in the forwards. There's some big boys that are playing against Van Heerden, Van Ryan, Roos, Leibenberg. So, they've got to establish that dominance up front to give this back line, which is quite an exciting back line, by the way, some opportunity, some good ball. And just hopefully they can do so. We can see the light of Billy, Rona, Dangy Powell, exciting players. So I just want to give them an opportunity.
And, of course, we've also got England versus Australia. Now, Australia last week... pretty much, yeah, and I rested a few of their top line players. Only just beat Japan 19-15, but I think this one's going to, we get to see, England has their first hit out, and we get to see the potential of what they are going to bring to this international window. Also, Australia, Joe Smith, you know, Joe Smith's side beat them last year in Twickenham.
Yeah.
It's just that the Australian backline, if they get ball, is a very good backline. Their loosies are good, but I think where England has that dominance is in that tight five.
Well, we've always known that Northern Hemisphere rugby is built on that tight play, the driving wall set pieces, and it'll be no different. You've got OJ back there, of course, with Chesham, big boys, big back row, especially number 8 Earl. So we know they'll be taking it off the back, keeping it tight, the up and unders. Nothing new for the Aussies. I wouldn't read too much in the match against Japan. They had a few players out. It was wet. It looked a crap day. They got out with a win, but this is their focus. And you did say, mention it. The back row is pretty settled for Australia, but Gordon Edmund, the combination. A game for the boy Edmund.
Under pressure, mate. Season.
Yeah, he's been battling for to secure that spot, so he's really got to cement it, take that ownership, that leadership. We know Pasini is very strong. Sui Ali, we know, is dangerous with good ball. And you did mention it, Jorgensen, Potter, Callaway. They have gas to burn, and we know how they, England would say, robbed them in the last minutes last year when they won that exciting thriller of a match at Twickenham. And it really put the Aussies on the map. I think it just gives them some confidence in their international arena, and Joe Schmidt, of course, has just guided them nicely. So, look, it's going to be a tight one at home. You'd expect England possibly to go out in favourites, but it wouldn't be scaring Aussie. They've beaten them here. Bagawin is possibly favourites, which is interesting. So looking forward to it. It's going to be an exciting game. The hard drivedness of of England against the excitement and the unpredictability of the Aussies. So a must-watch match.
And of course, then we move on to the more internationals over the weekend. South Africa versus Japan. Now, I'll be straight to the point there, AJ. This I think South Africa just probably too good, but yeah. And this is at Wembley. But when you look at the lineups here, South Africa they haven't made too many changes, but they've given some of their players a bit of a go, and a lot of the players that are in the South African side are Japanese-based players.
Yeah, and well, I think they've got a bit of confidence, Japan, but look, to be honest, when you're playing South Africa, and you're right, Erasmus has not made changes for the sake of playing Japan. He's given them the credit they deserve. You know, you look at their middle row, De Jager, Simon, the big Marts is playing. You've got Mostert and Wise and Khaleesi. So they are certainly giving them the respect. And Colby at the back and the back's there. Look, it's a very strong South African team.
Yeah.
So I'm anticipating they play to their potential. You know, that'll be a good 20, 25 points too good. I know that the Japanese will look and say, right, we're not going to be able to be dominant up front, but we'll run them off the park. So it'll be full of fireworks that way. I tell you, the ball will be like a hot potato, and that'll be their strength to try and run this big South African side off the park.
Absolutely, and of course, then we finish it, obviously, Scotland versus the USA. Well, the USA, are going to struggle to make the World Cup for 2027, and it's really there probably needs to be some changes within USA rugby structure itself, but that is for other people to sort. I think Scotland and probably by a hell of a lot.
Yes, it's quite interesting. You know, you're trying to broaden the appeal of international rugby, test match rugby, and the States have got their tournament in 31, so a lot of work to do for USA to get it up there. We know there's a following for it, but you've really got to have your team in the competition, so a lot of work to do. Can they get there? Well, let's wait and see. But Scotland at home at Murrayfield, far too good. And they're an established side. Yeah, I'm looking 20, 30 points.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, you talk about USA Rugby, they're trying to get a big influence also in the media now. This is my feelings on this, AJ. I believe there's a potential for us to help American Rugby by maybe doing a rugby show for the American audience. What do you think?
Well, I'm quite happy to.
Yeah, mate, we get an American host and we got former All Black AJ Whetton.
We establish ourselves in Chicago or New York. But look, they've got their own competition there, but I think they're running into a few problems financially. It's privately owned, I understand. There's some of their structures aren't in place, and they've really got to get that organised to make them competitive, but have the structure. And I just think it's not quite there at the moment. So,
Well, I've got a comment on Major League Rugby. It is terrible. Absolutely shocking to watch. It was set up to help American Rugby and also North American Rugby, their friends over the border in Canada. It's actually been to the detriment of it, because if you're 38, you finished, you want to make a quick bit of cash, let's go to America. And you can't blame players for doing that. They're making quick money, but it really hasn't helped American Rugby at all. And they will get the crowds here in 2031, but yeah, I suspect it's not going to be as big as if we were to say Japan or somewhere like that. But hey, the game has to move to different markets, and this is
what well, it's there think. Anyway, so it's just going to happen. So let's just see how it all sort of pans out. But you're right, so they've just got to get those administrative right at the top with administration, structure commercially, and someone's got to take a punt and say, right, let's draw a line in the sand and we start from scratch, and we've only got 5 years, but we do it right, and who knows what can happen in 5 years.
Absolutely. Anyway, hey, MPC final, what a great final it was. Canterbury was victorious, but what a fantastic final it was. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I have to say, yep, it was the final we all expected. Otago felt a bit disappointed. They did say they had a sellout crowd at Apollo Project Stadium. My nephew was there. He said it wasn't quite sold out, but he said it was a big crowd. So, you know, it's been a great competition, MPC.
Oh, love it, love it. And I've watched a lot of the games, and as I said, week in, week out, you couldn't quite tell who was going to win. But the two best teams, as it should, made the final. Both are go-away winners, because the Otago obviously lost the final to Canterbury, but they have the Ranfurly Shield. Just shows you how strong South Island rugby is. To get a nearly sold-out crowd, the numbers are great, and that's why I love the provincial rugby. It's just quite passionate, quite tribal. Just wish that Auckland of a blue and white was there and a bit of work to do off season.
I think there's still a lot of work to do, obviously.
But the competition, great. And I think it just shows you it is alive and kicking for those people that say, just take a look at the numbers and passion that people have in watching their domestic competition.
Yeah, and I would say that because, players, probably most of the country, 99% of the country, apart from those who live in the Canterbury region, probably wanted Otago to win. But hey, great win for Canterbury. Great way to send off Marty Burke and Tom Christie too.
Yeah, fantastic. And what a workhorse Tom Christie, and I can just say, being
underrated player, mate, very underrated.
Week in, week out, he puts his body on the line, and I just wish him all the best overseas. He's going to Newcastle, which will be tough work over there, having a brilliant season. But good luck with him and his family, and it deserves all the credit he gets, and also with Tony Burke. Rewards come your way through hard work, and I've certainly achieved that with success. So good luck to both of them.
Absolutely. So what's the plan for the weekend for AJ?
Well, it's quite good. I'm going to be able to do a few chores out here with Mrs. Whetton. I've got my daughter Olivia's got a, we had Halloween party.
So what did he do for Halloween? Did he just turn up as himself?
Well, that's what I said to her. She said, come on, Dad, why don't you come over just for a couple? Of course, some of the gang want to see you. And I said, well, that's very nice to invite an old man. What do I wear and what mask do I wear? And they just turn up as you do, Dad. I said, love you too, Liv. Thanks very much. I just thought I'm having a couple of jars with some people and young people to make me feel young and with Mrs. W. And, yeah, looking forward to it.
Oh, no, and I hope you and Nikki and have a good weekend, and we're going to talk next week, and we'll have a bit of a laugh, so don't, whatever you do today, don't leave yourself short.
We won't, mate. Look forward to the footy, and good luck to the All Blacks. You take care.
Yeah, you take care. That was AJ Whitten. Fantastic, isn't he? Just a good bloke. So, next up, we should have... I conducted an interview this week, and I was fortunately, you know, interviews like this you cannot turn down, and I had the privilege of speaking to Melody Robinson, and it was a good interview. We spoke about TV rights and what happens with TV rights now, so I'll just get to that right now.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Sports Weekend. And I have the pleasure, and we've taken a while, but I've finally been able to actually meet with Melody Robinson. Melody is TVNZ's Head of Sports, Entertainment and Partnership. She's also a former Blackburn, also a former Sky TV commentator, and a very good broadcaster and journalist. So, hey, Melody, great to finally chat after a while, but... it's been a really good year for TVNZ, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're really excited. About 8 months ago, we didn't have much of a pipeline of sport coming up. Myself, the CEO, and our GM of commercial have worked so hard to, get the relationship sorted, focus on the sports that will work with for us, and then get them approved from the board. And we've managed to get some of the best sports for us.
Well, you've had a fantastic year. Obviously, you've secured the rights to show the ANZ netball, and that also includes the Silver Ferns.
No Silver Ferns yet.
That's still with you. Are your competitors in Mount Wellington,
is
it?
That's in market right now. So,
that's
going to... space.
And, of course, then we have NPC, some selected Farah Palmer Cup games, Heartland Rugby. That's been a great coup because the NPC and Farah Palmer Cup has been absolutely outstanding to watch. It's been riveting television. And, of course, the Golden One. Now, I do have a few of your staff who sometimes come on my show, and I've already told them to start buying Mel coffee more often if they want to go to America. But the FIFA World Cup, obviously, all the All Whites games will be free.
Yep.
Selected games will be free, and it will be on a... sort of like a pay-per-view angle, because that's the way sports is going in the future. So with this FIFA World Cup model, this pay-per-view, how affordable will it be for, say, the normal Kiwi, the normal mum and dad, the normal person who loves football?
Yeah. So we'll launch the price sort of first quarter next year, but our intention is to... make sure that there's enough good games on TV1 free and TVNZ Plus free so that people who don't have the means to go and buy a pass will still watch some awesome football. And then our intention is to, surprise and delight with the price, hopefully. It's not going to be absolutely out of the price range for normal Kiwis. So really excited. We want it to work because... if we do well with it, that enables us to bid for other sports, which...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and which for us, for TVNZ, we'll always make sure that there's really good sports on the free-to-air, as well as everything on pay. So you'll notice with a lot of Sky Sports, they would put minimum obligations or the minimum number of games or sport on their free-to-air channel, and often it's delayed. For the Olympics, for instance, it's... live and as live. Whereas we like to make sure that, you know, every Kiwi will get what they want.
I think the most important thing, especially with the FIFA World Cup, is that New Zealanders, because we've got a horse in the race, so
yeah.
obviously people will be watching to see how the All Whites go, but you'll have that sort of, people will be engaged around that time. I think you'll see the eyes of other sports will be turning to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing is, for a lot of our Kiwis, as long as they can see it, as long as they can go to, they can watch it at home, and the timing is absolutely perfect. You've obviously got games on at lunchtime.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people, you'll probably see a lot of people claiming they'll be sick going home. And, but I think it's really good, and I think the future, when we look at the free-to-air model, like, I've seen what TVNZ has done. Obviously, you missed out on getting the rights for the Olympics. Sky's got that, but that is a competitive market. But looking at the future and what TVNZ would be looking to do, like, would you be looking at maybe in the future making bids for some more Grand Slam tennis? Would you be looking at, say, Diamond League athletics, more motorsports? Because I see, because I've actually got the app on my phone, I have to say that. I didn't just put it up just because I needed the interview mail, but I believe the product which is there, it gives people a different angle of sports. So I just believe we need to, I think Kiwis are really going to free-to-air sports. Obviously, you've had record viewership for cricket, and you probably will get record viewership. What are some of the big plans heading into the future?
Well, our sports strategy is, number one, we look at big sporting events that Kiwis love. We prefer it in...
Sorry to interrupt there. I would just say to you, I see you've got the Melbourne Cup.
We do, of course.
Congratulations.
We've had that for a few years now. It's a partnership with Entain, that one, so they produce the coverage, but works super well for us. Everybody stops and watches the Melbourne Cup, so that one works.
Yeah.
But going back to what we're going to buy, so a few big key international events that Kiwis love is what we'd like to focus on, maybe one or two a year. We can't afford everything, so we'll be really selective. And then we've got sports, seasonal sports that bring in male audiences or young audiences.
Yeah.
That lines up with our TVNZ Plus digital strategy, because those are digital sports. For instance, NFL, Super Bowl. Then we like entertainment sports, so Chasing the Fox, we're doing that again this year.
Oh, great.
Black Clash, and we've just announced that we're going to do a new National Athletics Champ concept. So
fantastic.
That is the National Athletics Champs prime time Saturday night on March the 7th with a splice of celebrity races in between.
So you're adding that entertainment value.
Yeah, and then the other sports rights are partnerships with New Zealand sports rights holders.
Yeah, like with New Zealand hockey, New Zealand rugby with the NPC, New Zealand football, has been really important.
New Zealand rugby is seasonal sport that's going to bring in huge numbers, because once you make it very accessible to Kiwis, they'll be back watching NPC Farah Palmer Cup Heartland, because it's really awesome.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and it showcases not just good rugby, but New Zealand as a country and all their awesome personality and differences and all of our differences.
Well, I think one of the big things is that when we look at what NPC's done, I see, take for instance NPC, and I've spoken to people before, I see it as probably a big city problem, but in the regions, the places like the Taranakis, the Manawatus, the Tasmans, Dunedin, getting good crowds. I never thought Apollo Project Stadiums would be sold out. In fact, I offended a few Cantabrians calling them Aucklanders, and it didn't go down too well, but...
Well, I'm a Cantab originally, but never played for Canterbury. I played Otago, Wellington, Auckland.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of torn whether or not I ever support the Canterbury team, because they win too much.
Well, I've got to go down there for Christmas, so I've got to be careful what I say, because if things get repeated on you.
Yeah.
Mel, I see what pardon me. I see what TVNZ has done, and I think it's going to be great. Your competitors down the road in Eden Terrace, TV3, obviously their partnership with Stuff, that will be very, very, that will be interesting, because you've got the Sky Stuff combination. Obviously, they are now a major competitor for free for air.
Yeah,
Premier. Yeah, well, they always have, but probably more now.
Well, yes, they are, because they've been bought by Sky. So, you know, Sky will make the decision on where they put their free sports, whether that be on Sky Open or 3. So I'm sure that 3 will get more sports on there. They've obviously had some with Sale GP. Stuff actually was leading sports buys on behalf, and then would partner with 3. So America's Cup, they did that deal and brought 3 into it. So now that we've got Nadia Tolich as our new head of content news, the former managing director of Stuff, that will be interesting, because she's come to us and she's got some really good sport capability of buying sports. So yeah, look, Sky and 3 would always be able to outbid us. They've got Sky's revenue is more than any other media companies combined, but we can offer other capabilities. A massive news machine driving interest. We're a massive marketing machine. We're free unless we put it behind the pay, but we'll always have some free if we do put it on pay. And also we've got entertainment capabilities. So a lot of our commissioners, myself, do entertainment, drama, and other scripted. And so what we like to do is, if we buy a sport like FIFA football, our programmers or commissioners will look around to have a look at other content, which is football related, might be comedy, might be reality, and they'll try and buy that to supplement the interest around the sport.
Yep, and it's an interesting market. It is a competitive market in many ways. You're restrained because obviously with the government ownership, there's only so much money that can go around.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and we put money into local production. That's really important for us. Which non-sport, we put some money into sport, huge amount into news, and then international content was actually the stuff that makes us the money. So. Yeah. We buy a lot of that to make the money, and then we invest in New Zealand content as well.
No, I think it's perfect. Well, Melody, it's been a while, but it's been great having a chat. I hope too that I can get you on my show maybe towards the end of the year, as we look at possibly some of the things that have happened in the year of women's sports in New Zealand.
Awesome.
Thank you, Melody.
And that was Melody Robinson, and I have to say, really good interview, great insight. So instead of us going for another song, we're going to actually keep it going, because I've had 24 hours of a lot of pre-records. So I was able to get Joey Green, because he had a big touch tournament down in South Auckland and wasn't available to come on air live. So we've done a pre-record this morning, and we'll be talking the rugby league. So let's get to Joey right now.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend and Rugby League, a big weekend. And this is proudly brought to you by Douglas Drainage Limited. Every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimize costs with information and technology, and provide information with technology and research. That's what they do at Douglas Drainage. So for all your drainage needs, give them a call. Their number is 0274 838 373. So big weekend of rugby league, and here to join us, as he joins us most Saturdays, and we're doing this a bit earlier, Joey Green, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, mate. Hopefully the weather is similar to what it is, I guess, currently tomorrow afternoon, because then it'll sort of perform for us in our paper weekend of rugby league.
Absolutely, and of course highlighted by the Kiwis versus the Tonga tomorrow, 6:05 Eden Park. Obviously a few enforced changes with Sebastian Cripps coming in for Ronaldo Mulitalo. Jeremy Marshall King's out, so the bench also changes. Big Nelson's out, so Tamari Martin comes to the bench, and as does Xavier Williamson from the Broncos. Tongan side, really, you know, it's a very huge pack. You know, Jason Tamalolo, Adam Fanua Blake, and of course Ali Katoa. And then you've got the combination of Katoa and Ongi in the half. Now, the Kiwis, I believe, Joey, have a slight edge in the pack because of the likes of Kieran Foran and Dylan Brown. But this match should be huge.
Yeah, 100%. Christine, it's going to be a massive matchup tomorrow afternoon. I'm sure the Tongans are about to settle it out as well. Boston probably doesn't look like that at the moment. If I know anything about Tongans and the like, Tonga in the last couple of years, they always turn up very last minute. So no doubt it's going to be a bumper crowd tomorrow. Like you said, I think that's kind of going to be the ending point for the Kiwis tomorrow afternoon as well. Like you've got a very experienced staff during the forest. And Dylan Brown, they've already played a game together as well. When you take a look at Tonga Moore from last week, matchup against Four Star Moore as well, Isaiah Katoa just didn't really have much else outside him, you know, to help him organise the career. Whilst Isaiah Yongi does have a lot of X-factor, he doesn't have a whole lot of runs on the board as a 5-8, and we kind of assumed leading up to the Pacific Champs, it was either going to make the team or break the team. Last week, it kind of broke the team this week. It could kind of make the team as well. They've got the game together on their board. A lot of the side is relatively unchanged for the Tongan team. Whereas you look at the Kiwi side, you know, there's a few changes. Ben Crosslink comes into the 9 using. Moira Martin gets a run on the bench at 14 as well. I don't mind that selection. He played a lot of 14 for the Warriors this year as well. Always capable of filling in a few positions. Especially when he came off the bench in a lot of those Warriors games. So a lot of the time he was filling in at hooker.
Yeah.
He's an international hooker. You know, he could do a heck of a job, and you could do a lot worse than putting someone like Kamai Demata. Playing in that hook and go there as well. Xavier Willison getting a run as well. I feel like he should have been here at the start of the game. Obviously, it was good to see Solomona back in the black and white jersey, but if you look at recent form and players who had kind of earned their way into the Kiwi squad. Xavier Willison was probably one of those players who earned their way into Stacey Jones' squad, so credit to him to see him in the black and white jersey now, but it's going to be interesting to see how they can match up against this common pack.
Absolutely, and of course what you said about Tamari Martin, one thing I noticed when he did come on into that dummy half role, he gave a lot of his big forwards good front on ball.
Yeah, 100%. Like you could tell he knows, I guess, from his days of playing the halves, he knows what the forwards want, and it's just wanting to find the ball in front of them so that they can run onto the ball with momentum. It's kind of one of those really basic points that coaches want, but it's probably a credit to him for helping develop this craft. You know, he's not seeing himself in the 7 duty, so he's got to find his way into the Kiwis and the Warriors squad somehow, and it's filling this 14 duty. That's going to have to be the way to go. But you look at the rest of the Tonga side as well. So Eva Havili, whilst he's not a traditional 9, or anymore rather, you can do a lot worse than Eva Havili. I thought he was quite disappointing last week. Felicia Kalfusi comes into the starting side for now. Whether we see that change potentially tomorrow, obviously with Jason Tamalolo missing last week, he came into the starting side. Adam Fonua Blake was massive. Paul Alamotti comes into the side as well for Robert Toya, who makes way through injury. So Paul Alamotti, when we've seen him play for the Panthers over
the had a great season.
He found some great at the end of the season, which saw them overtake Tom Jenkins. Yep. So that's a very smart move there from Coach Christian Wolf. But I'm really interested to see how the Tongan side can back up. Yes, they've kind of got the odds stacked against them. They have to win by more than 17 points to have any chance of making the Pacific Champs final next weekend. But if there's any side who could do it, it's going to be a red hot Tongan side after what we saw last weekend.
I would say that red wave, and we're probably expecting probably 30,000 plus, and there'll be a big red flag coming through Eden Park tomorrow around Sandra. Of course, before that, we also have the Kiwi Ferns versus the Jillaroos. Now, the Jillaroos were just so clinical against Vetu Samoa last week.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Whilst we touched on it last week, the Vetu Samoa side really pulled the Kiwi Ferns off guard in that first half in their matchup a couple of weeks ago. The Jillaroos are just a different kettle of fish when it comes to international rugby league. We saw at the start of the year when they played the English side over in Vegas. That was a hefty scoreline, and obviously you've seen the exclusion of the women's game in Vegas for 2026. But when you look at the matchup between these two sides, the last time they played last year was 24-4. The Kiwi Ferns probably haven't been in the Jillaroos in a while, and the Kiwi Ferns coming off, I guess, struggled against the Star Morning side compared to a De La Rue side who, whilst they're going to be missing Tamika Upton tomorrow afternoon through injury, you know, they bring in someone like Abby Church from the Parramatta Eels who had quite a decent season, to be fair, for that Parramatta NRLW side. So it's not like exactly there's going to be a drop in form for this De La Rue side. So I'm expecting to see the Kiwi Ferns front up and give it a decent knock, but the De La Rue's, like we just touched on, they're a different kettle. You know, when it comes to the rest of the pack, and I'm expecting not as heavy a scoreline as what we saw last week against Samoa, but it's going to be a tough outing for the Kiwi Ferns.
Absolutely, and of course, in the Pacific Bowl, Papua New Guinea versus Fiji. This one should be quite an interesting one.
Yeah, especially when we saw Papua New Guinea take on the Cook Islands last week. They weren't as strong as Fiji were against the Cook Islands in that first half, but they made up for it in that second half, and it probably just needed to take them a bit of a while to wake up and, you know, get the wheels rolling against a Cook Island side who were just trying to find anything and everything to help set the platform for them to try and qualify for the World Cup when they face South Africa next weekend, in the final stage for Pacific Champs. But Fiji, when you see them perform like they did in that first half against the Cook Islands, and it's going to be a tough afternoon for Papua New Guinea, regardless of whether they've got the home crowd behind them or not. They've got a lot better class in their back line. They've got Jareem Buller, Sonia Saruba, Kurt Donohoe, whilst he's not playing 5-8 for the Dolphins currently. He's a massive touch footy player coming through, so we know he's got a bit of footwork and a bit of ball playing about him. And they've also got an NRL quality halfback in Brandon Wakeham. Whilst he obviously isn't playing NRL football week in, week out at the moment, he's been there, done that before for the Bulldogs and the Tigers. So,
yeah,
they've got a very good side on paper, the Fijians. They've still got Tui Kamikamitha, as well as a couple of local players in their side, who make for interesting stories. But they've just got to start impact across the side of the Fiji Bucky, and I think it's going to be a tough afternoon for the Fiji Kumu tomorrow, or this afternoon rather.
Yeah, and of course, then we have the Kangaroos versus England, that first test. Really, Kangaroos so dominant. I don't know what Sean Wayne can do to get the spirits up, because I think, as I said to you last week, I believe there is such a gap between the Kangaroos and England.
Yeah, I thought the occasion might have been one for England to stand up. You're playing at Wembley, you're playing the Kangaroos at home. In an Asher series, which we haven't seen for 20-plus years. I thought, with a lot of the media that was coming out of England, I thought they were really going to be up for that matchup last week. And from what I've seen of it so far, geez, they were disappointing. And even you could look at the Kangaroo side as well. They didn't play the greatest, but to still win 26-6, and you're still playing, from what I'm hearing, a 5 or a 6 out of 10, then it's either warning signs for England or warning signs for the Kangaroos that they're still beating sides by 20 and they're not playing the greatest football. So AJ Brimson sounds like he's coming into this English side at fullback with Jack Wellsby. Whether that's going to be the right ball for Sean Wayne to make or not, we'll obviously find out tomorrow morning. But England are going to need to back up their ideas, because if they don't get it right tomorrow, they would have already lost the series if they can't win game two of the Ashes series. But when you look at the bigger picture heading into the World Cup next year, they're going to have to come down under and face a whole lot of pressure from the English media as well. So I don't think there's going to be too much pressure on the Kangaroos anymore for the rest of the series. All the pressure is going to be on England. They're playing at home. If they want to have a decent chance at the World Cup next year on this side of the planet, they're going to have to try and find something for these next two games. Otherwise, it's going to be a long, long year for English players over there.
I think it will be, and I think, I just believe, obviously, if you haven't got close to a full NRL side, you cannot compete against Australia. And that is no disrespect to Super League, because I believe there's such a gap between the NRL and Super League. And,
the quality of players in this, and I believe for the future of English Rugby League, I think a lot of them, I think 90% of the side needs to be based in the NRL. But that is for another day. Hey, I was just going through the news during the week, and of course, huge news for the Warriors, Wahine. Stacey Waka, former Black Ferns 15s, former Black Ferns 7s player, World Cup winner, Olympic gold medalist in 7s. What a huge signing this is for the Warriors.
Oh, I'll tell you what, the last, you know, 3 weeks or so of Warriors NRLW signings have been massive.
Yeah.
For their side leading into 2026, you've got Mele Hufanga, who won the player of the final in the grand final.
Yeah, huge boy.
Zala, who was one of the original Warriors NRLW players. Gail Broughton, who, while she wasn't one of the original NRLW Warriors players, you know, she's, you know, represented the Black Ferns Sevens, won with the Brisbane Broncos. They're adding, premiership winners into their side, along with Stacey Waka, who's, definitely going to boost the depth of their outside backs. I think it's going to be a huge year for the Warriors Wahine side next year. If they can find their combinations early on and get that sort of well, then I think they're going to be a side to watch. It's probably the thing that they struggled with the most is here. Injury, pregnancies kind of didn't help them along the way, so they kind of had to really reshuffle a lot of the squad. But you could see, glimpses of potential with that Warriors side. It just couldn't quite click it together, but I think they had a nose three players, along as I'm sure there's about to be a few more signings that they announce over the next 6 to 9 months. It's going to be a great way for the Warriors to boost their NRLW side as well as their female pathways.
Yeah, and I believe they're heading in the right direction there, Joey. I think it's I believe that obviously there is a big focus on the women's game, and I think the biggest thing is that what we find is the crossover of codes between rugby union and rugby league, which has really, really helped the women's game in both codes, if we want to be honest about it.
Yeah, 100%, and I think it's what's done really well is a lot of these
Sevens
girls who have come over to NRLW. They've really started to flourish, and obviously there isn't as much space on a league field compared to what there is in sevens. But you can just see the class and the professionalism. That's the common themes rather that have come from a lot of these sevens girls who have come over to NRLW. The professionalism they bring from being in full time systems has really helped a lot of, especially the Warriors Wahine side as well. It's really helped them start to flourish and understand what it takes to be a full-time athlete, and no doubt once we see that starting to trickle into the rest of the Auckland comp and the rest of the rest of our national game, it's going to obviously start to see our Kiwi Ferns become a better side, and hopefully the players who don't get picked for the Kiwi Ferns can start to filter out to their Pacific Island nations and hopefully start to increase the women's international game as well.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say it's been a fantastic chat today, Joey. Now, you're in a touch tournament, are you?
Yeah, I'm out at a touch tournament this weekend. We've got the Pacific Cup happening out at Mountford Park in Manurewa. It's a massive tournament. Obviously, all the Pacific Island nations getting their contingents together. Today we see the kids, so the under-10s to the under-16s playing today, and then tomorrow we'll see the adults doing the same thing, and then obviously tomorrow I'll duck away from the touch tournament and get to Eden Park to do duties here. But then you also got some footy up in Kaitaia as well. You got the Auckland men's and women taking on New Zealand Māori, so obviously isn't much footy or local footy on anymore today. You still got a bit of something to watch for. Our Auckland Rugby League. Hopefully there is a live stream link somewhere. I know there are a few rumblings through the week that a couple of things have fallen through, so hopefully they managed to find a media company somewhere and get that off the ground.
Absolutely. Well, you have a wonderful weekend, Joey, and we'll catch up next week. Cheers, mate.
Well, thanks again, mate. We'll chat again next week.
Cheers.
And that was Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. And I have to say, great interview and, of course, big match. And if you want to try and get there early tomorrow for Eden Park, because I think we're looking at about 30 to 35,000 for the Rugby League. So the next, so our next interview I done, and this is brought to you by Force Electrical. And it's just about Force Electrical. Started in 2014 by my good mate Nick Brakovich. It's grown, and it's really grown across a wider region, and it's, you know, and they're respected within, they do provide your efficient electrical services for your homes and businesses. So why you should choose them, and this is why: reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. You know, this, that they know what they're doing, and what they do is they can cover residential, commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage, and ELV solutions such as data cabling, automation and smart wiring. So if you're looking for all your electrical needs, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341, or you can email them nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, this next slot, and please, if anyone's listening, it is the race that basically stops two nations. Now, if you're going to have a bet or do whatever you do, it's R18. Please bet responsibly. So I had a great chat to my good friend Sam Lashes Casey as we preview the Melbourne Cup.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, Tuesday, the 1st of November, and first Tuesday of November, the race that stops two nations, and it's the Melbourne Cup. And if you're going to have a bet, R18, bet responsible, whatever you do. But here to talk to us about it is a guy that's quite well known to, he's beginning to be quite well known to the station, is Sam Casey. He works for Sports Nation, works for Trackside TV. So Sam, good morning to you, mate. How you going?
Yeah, morning to you, Eamon. Very, very good. It's always an exciting time of year when it comes to the Melbourne Spring Carnival, which is really exciting for all involved, to be quite honest, on both sides of the Tasman.
And I think the big thing is, it's like, this is the biggest day for both the Australian TAB and the New Zealand TAB. There's more money spent on a Melbourne Cup, but it's not just this. We offer sweepstakes, people generally enjoying the occasion, and this one especially looks like it's going to be a very, very interesting one. When you look at some of the horses that are there, like you look at El Reefa. Now that has come in as a big favourite in this one, Sam.
Yeah, for sure. The horse of Joseph O'Brien's, that Joseph, obviously a great trainer up there in the UK, believes this is the best horse he's ever brought south of the equator. So that is a big statement. The big question mark for El Reefa is the fact that 59 kilos is the weight that he's got to lump around all 3,200 metres of the Flemington track. And now, that is a massive impulse to carry, and not many horses, over the course of history have carried that weight to go on and win the cup. So, if any, to be quite honest. So, look, I can't have him based off that weight. They do say that weight stops trains, Eamon. So, I'll be steering in other directions when it comes to El Reefa, to be quite honest. But the big question mark, really, and you can't really get with confidence into the race until probably, an hour or two out, because the forecast for Melbourne on Monday and Tuesday was upwards of sort of 53 millimetres, which is obviously a hell of a lot of rain, which would turn the track into a genuine mud bath. It is seemingly slowly starting to improve for Melbourne, and they're only now talking 20 mils, which will still make it very much a soft track for sure. However, we're still, 3 days out, if it continues to improve and we get a couple of wind changes, then hopefully the crowd and the track can enjoy some good weather. But if the rain does come, then it really, really does open things up.
Well, it becomes, well, it really becomes a heavy track. And when you look at some of that, we look at the heavy tracks, it would really suit the European horses, because they're probably used to, you know, when you look at, say, some of the racetracks in England and in Ireland, they're heavier. I'm looking at some of the horses, and one that's really, obviously half yours, that's, everyone is keeping an eye on that, but I look at Buckaroo now, it's promised so much, and this is a horse by Chris Waller, it's promised so much, but it just hasn't delivered. Do you think it's got a show in this one?
Yeah, it certainly does. Chris Waller waited for a long time to make a decision on whether or not to go to this race, and after just going down a nose in Australia's best race, the Cox Plate, last weekend, they've decided to back up and go to the Cup, and the 57 kilos is enough weight to carry for sure. He ran in the race last year, it was, and didn't really acquit himself overly well. However, there's a little bit of confidence around Buckaroo, and I can tell you that if he is to run top three, there's a very small wager placed on a 12-leg multi a long time ago, and Buckaroo is the last leg to run top three. And I think, I'm not actually sure of the numbers, but it's something like $10 or $20 into 736,000 or something like that. So a big multi relying on Buckaroo, so you can watch that one with interest, even if you want to see how that lucky punter gets on.
And if you're betting R18, bet responsible. The big thing is, or even, but I think, you know, you also look at Verban, Gail Waterhouse's horse really has come in, hasn't really done well at Melbourne. Maybe it's a year. The main thing that interests me, Lashes, is that it's been in the last, and I remember this, in the last 30 years, is the European influence on the Melbourne Cup and in Australia and in Australasian racing itself. You know, the Europeans come over here because the stakes are better. Obviously, the Melbourne Cup, the Everest, the Cox Plate. But, you know, can we see the European dominance stopped in the Melbourne Cup?
No, the European dominance will definitely continue, and I think it might be in the form of May Dan, a horse of Simon and Ed Crisford's that's come down, ran in the Caulfield Cup last start, was quite unlucky. It was only just getting into its work, and it didn't quite handle the Caulfield track. It'll be much better suited to the bigger, roomier Flemington track, and the key booking and the key pointer, I believe anyway, is the ride of James McDonald.
Yeah.
James McDonald, obviously the famous Kiwi jockey, the world's best jockey, usually he would only get down to a ride as low as about 55 kilos at a real push. Now, the fact that Maidan's got 54 kilos and James McDonald has taken the ride, which means he's going to have to cut a lot more weight than usual, shows you that he thinks this horse is a serious, serious chance to win the Cup, because otherwise he wouldn't bother putting himself through that process. So, I think that's a big tick in the box to show that the world's best jockey is very confident that this horse is worth cutting that weight for.
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at it, and I think, well, that could be the one. It's finished well in the Caulfield. Well, they say it's untried over the distance, and they say this class can be quality. Once you put a jockey like McDonald on it, you know that there could be something special. Just out of interest, New Zealand interest in the Cup. Is there anything for, like, obviously I can remember, and I'm a lot older than you, Lashes, and you don't have to say anything on there. I can remember in 83 when Kiwi won. I can remember when we had the likes of Empire Rose winning in 1988. So I can remember something. Have we got a genuine Kiwi horse, really, that can contest this Melbourne Cup?
No, not this year. I think our only sort of two Kiwi-trained horses that were a chance have either pulled out late or not made the final field. So as it stands at the moment, Eamon, we don't have a Kiwi runner in the Melbourne Cup, which is a real shame because usually
we've got great tradition in the Lashes. We've really always had a great tradition. You know, it used to always be like probably back to a day when you were a very very young fella, probably at kindergarten. You know, it used to be can the Kiwis beat the Aussies in their own race in Melbourne? But now, I suppose now it's a real concern that we don't. But you've been to Melbourne. What's the atmosphere like, Lashes?
Oh, honestly, you take the train pulls right up outside the Flemington Racecourse gates. The atmosphere is unlike anything I've ever really experienced. The fact that you think, you know, you go to most racecourses in New Zealand on the big days, Cup Week, Karaka Million, etc., there'd be 10 to 15,000 maybe at Rickenham at a push.
Yeah.
You know, you walk through the gates of Flemington, there's all of a sudden 105,000. Yeah, it's just an extraordinary day to experience, but it doesn't feel like there's 105,000, if that makes sense. You're not overly crammed in. The access is great. The facilities are superb. They make it so easy to get in and out of the venue.
Yeah.
It really is an enjoyable day, and it's something that you've just got to do. You've got to turn it off.
Yeah.
I won't be going back every year because it is a big old day, make no mistake. But it is something
that I've done. It's a big old day on the pocket. It's a big old day on the Amba as well, two Lashes. And I know a few jokers that are going over for it. And one's going for his first one, and he's looking forward. So what's your day like for Melbourne Cup? Obviously, we've got race meetings not only in Australia. Obviously, we've got the race meetings in Melbourne, but usually Ellerslie have a good day.
Yes, I'll be down at Ellerslie on Melbourne Cup Day. It's always a good day. A lot of sort of Christmas party type vibes. A lot of punters, you know, make the most of the day and get out there. And Wingatui is always a good day down there for the students too. So it is. It's becoming a day where it sort of, I guess, like you say, stops two nations. A lot of workplaces run the old sweepstakes and, you know, have a couple of drinks and come 5 p.m. when the race starts, everyone's tuned in. It is a really, really enjoyable day, the first Tuesday in November. Always a good entree to our very own Cup Week here in New Zealand as well.
Absolutely, of course, that's coming up very soon. And, of course, well, Lashes, I hope that you have a good rest of the weekend, and I have to say to you, I seem to, every time I turn on the radio, I seem to hear you on everyone's radio show at the moment. You're a very popular man, Lashes.
A busy time of year for us here, of course, with the racing and what have you, and of course the All Blacks end of year tour getting underway as well as the cricket. So it's all happening, and there's no place I'd rather be, to be honest.
No, there wouldn't be any place. So, well, anyway, Lashes, you have a good rest of the day, and we will catch up. Soon for a quick Amber Liquid, mate.
No worries, mate. Sounds good to me.
Thanks, Sam. That was Sam Casey. Cheers.
And that was Lashes, and you know, good old talk. Hey, I've just seen something which people may remember, but does anyone remember this?
Lashes lost it. Now here's Ben Smith in space.
Bowden Barrett.
Bowden Barrett's got a heap of pace. He leads the charge.
Go Bowden.
That's some damage.
That's the way to go.
Bowden Barrett.
Yep, and that was a really great moment in New Zealand sports. 10 years ago now. 10 years ago. God, it seems, well, I was going to say it seems like yesterday, but it really was really one of the great moments, and probably one of the great TV commentary moments with Nisbo and Justin Marshall really getting quick. You know, Nisbo showing a bit of passion, as we all know, Nisbo's a very cool customer, but no, a great moment. Okay, so next up, we are going to play a bit of music, and then we're going to talk to the big fella, Seamus Martin, about a bit of football, mate.
sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart, 'cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars, 'cause you light up the path.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Hey, if you're looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market, this is the man you need to speak to. His name is Robert Thompson. He works for Barford and Thompson out of the Epsom branch. Robert is knowledgeable, helpful, and will give you, will set the best price, will get you the best price, get you the best result, and also will provide you with superb knowledge. Robert's number is 021-737-949 and his email r.thompson, and that's Thompson with a P, at barfords.co.nz. And I know that Robert's got a big day ahead with football. He's probably off to the league, and he's probably going to send me a message midweek about how terrible our EPL picks are, Seamus.
Oh, having a shocker, aren't we? I think the last 2 weeks in a row, I've got 4 out of 10 and 4 out of 9, so running at less than 50%.
But yes.
Look, with a team like Bournemouth flying high in second place, and Tottenham in third, and Sunderland, I think, up in fourth, I think it's a little surprise. I haven't picked those teams at all this season, and they're flying at the moment. We can talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing I want to speak about, Football Ferns 0, USA 6. USA are one of the top teams in the world, but and it's a tough one because obviously Michael Mayne, a really top bloke. I think he's a good bloke. He's a good mate of yours. I don't know what needs to be improved there, because it could have been more, Seamus. That's the reality of it.
It is 100%. Look, on paper, 6-0 is a terrible, it's a lopsided scoreline, isn't it? But you make a really good point. USA, you know, one of the top teams in the world, the Olympic champions, they've been at the top of women's football for years now. And I think what needs to improve is New Zealand needs to try and consistently play teams like this as much as possible. I think we've seen on the men's side of the game, our top men's players starting to play in really competitive club environments. I just don't think we've quite got there on the women's side. We've got players in professional environments on the women's side, but they're either not playing regularly or not the mainstays of their teams, and certainly not forcing themselves onto those big continental tournaments like the UEFA Champions League or like the English Premier League. So, look, I think the biggest disappointment, I think the USA result for me, I think that's to be expected. I think you're right, it could have been a case of a few more. I think the two results against Mexico will be the ones that Michael Mayne and the Football Ferns will be really disappointed about, because that's a team in the world rankings that are around New Zealand's position. I think 36 plays 32. Those are the sorts of games that you want to be winning winning on international level. So I think those two defeats in Mexico will sting more than the USA game, which I think, you know, I don't think that personally, and I've spoken to Michael about this, I don't think the Football Ferns went out and went into damage limitation. They didn't try and keep it below five or keep it below four. They went out and tried to play.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a big gulf in the ability of the two sets of teams, but when you do go out and try and play, you leave yourself susceptible, and 6-0, I think they were lucky to come away with a 6. It could have been easily 7, 8, 9 even. But look, all in all, I think the disappointment will be from the Mexico game rather than the USA game.
I'd have to agree with you there, Seamus. If they should be at least getting, you know, you should be expecting a result or minimum a draw out of this. Hey, just before we get on to the National League, all white squad to be named next week. Do not expect to see Chris Wood on that side. He looks as though he may not be available for this part of the international window, as he still is carrying a bit of an injury, and he's also out for Forest tonight. So, and also in some other news, we pass on our condolences to Marco Stamenic. His father passed away during the week. So on the behalf of this segment of the Sports Weekender, Marco, we pass on our condolences.
Oh, nice touch. Yeah, very sad for Marco and his family. Nico was a really great supporter, not only of his son Marco, but also of the entire All Whites and New Zealand football community. So, yeah, desperately sad news to hear that through the week. And I know Marco was being supported by his great mate and fellow All White Matthew Garbutt as well. So, good to know that he's got support around him. But yes, don't expect to see Woodsy or Marco, I dare suggest, in that All White squad to be named for those matches coming up in the USA in November.
Absolutely. So we move on to the National League, and now this is something where our percentage has been quite high, Seamus, so we can't stuff this up. Anyway, we started off a bit of a Wellington derby, Wellington Olympic versus Western Suburbs. Then we moved down the line to Christchurch United versus Auckland City FC, and of course, so they're the first two games. Your thoughts on those first two games?
Well, look, I think Wellington Olympic are the team to beat here. They've already got the Chatham Cup locked away this season. They've got the Central League locked away this season. They're currently leading the National League men after five matches. We're going into match day six this weekend. You know, they've had the better of Western Suburbs in the Central League. I expect them to have the better of them, in the National League as well. That second game, Christchurch United versus Auckland City, that's a really interesting one for me. Christchurch with home advantage, maybe sneak that one in my mind. You know, I said last week, Auckland City, when they need to come up with a result, they generally do. They played Auckland FC reserves last week. It finished as a 1-1 draw. I'm going to tip Christchurch to upset the apple cart here, maybe a little bit on paper, and I'm going to pick Christchurch to defeat Auckland City in that game.
Oh, that's a big call, Seamus. And the other two Saturday games, it's Miramar versus Western Springs, Auckland United versus Coastal Spirits. Well, Western Springs are really chasing Wellington Olympic. They're in second place. Miramar at home, hard prospect at Dave Farrington Park.
Yeah, totally. Look, that's Western Springs in second place, Miramar Rangers in third. So that's a really, on paper, that's the match of the round, that one. I think Western Springs might just have a little bit of the quality over Miramar, but Miramar are a team that are in really good form. And as you say, Dave Farrington Park, not an easy place to go and get a result, but I am going to tip the Northern League champions, Western Springs, to win that one and keep the pressure on Wellington Olympic. In terms of that Auckland United versus Coastal Spirit game, well, that's 11th place, 10th, two teams at the bottom half of the table. I think Auckland United should be too strong for Coastal Spirit on that, although the team from Christchurch and Coastal are in good recent form, but I think Auckland United will win that one. And rounding out the National League,
Auckland FC Reserve versus Birkenhead.
An interesting one, isn't it? Birkenhead are a lot lower than they'd expect to be. Seventh plays eighth, but it's a really congested table as well. So one win sees you pop straight up into the conversation for first or second. Look, I think it would be Birkenhead United based on league form that defeat Auckland FC, but they're becoming a really more and more a difficult prospect to play, or Auckland FC reserves in that one. So I could see it finishing as a draw, but I won't sit on the fence. I'm going to back Birkenhead, the red and white stripes, to win that one.
We haven't lost the Bunnings sponsorship there, Seamus. You can still sit on the fence, but we'll leave that for the EPL. Anyway, we go to the National Women's League, and of course, already played last night. West Coast Rangers 2, Western Springs 1. West Coast are really chasing Auckland United and Wellington United. So, these are the games that are ahead. Obviously, Saturday game, Canterbury United versus Wellington United. Petone versus Auckland United on Sunday, Eastern Suburbs versus Southern United, and Phoenix Reserves versus Central Football.
Well, look, I think Wellington United should defeat Canterbury Pride. You know, Canterbury United haven't been the powerhouse that we've seen in previous years. I feel like I say that every week. So, look, I'm going to tip the team from the capital, Wellington United, to win that one. Auckland United will be too strong for Petone. They'll remain at the top of the table. But you're right, they've got West Coast Rangers really nipping at their heels, and even Eastern Suburbs too, who are in action against Southern United at home. I think Eastern Suburbs will win that one. And it's a case, really, of, again, the Northern League clubs in Auckland United, yeah. West Coast Rangers, I should say, and Eastern Suburbs in the conversation. I've been really disappointed with Wellington Phoenix Reserves in this competition,
yes.
Eamon. They're in eighth place. They were the Kate Shepherd Cup finalists. They were really in really strong form through the winter season. But I don't know whether it's the impending arrival of the A-League women's season kicking off shortly, that maybe their attention, their focus has slipped a little bit. They will be too strong for Central. Central really struggling for the second year in a row in this competition. But I'd expected Wellington Phoenix Reserves in that National Women's League to be much higher than the eighth place that they are find themselves in.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we go to the A-League. And, of course, a couple of games. We started off Saturday, Auckland FC. Good win last week against Western Sydney Wanderers. But they have Adelaide. Now, Adelaide have all, you know, last season were a very difficult prospect for Auckland FC. Obviously, there'll be a lot of focus on some of these players, especially with potential of Chris Wood being out for the All Whites. Players like Jesse Randall, players like Logan Rogerson really want to impress Darren Baisley. But this one, I just see it as a draw.
Yeah, look, I think that's a fair assumption. Yeah, Adelaide United are a different proposition this season. They're coached by a guy I've known for 25 years, Ayrton Andreoli, a Brazilian based in Australia who used to have the Solomon Islands national team. And he's got them playing some really nice football, particularly in the attacking third with some intricate passing. I think Auckland FC, as we've seen already last year, their game is built on defence. They're yet to concede a goal after 180 minutes. And, you know, if they can keep that resilience in the defensive third, they've got the players of quality. I was really impressed last weekend by Lockie Brook.
Yeah.
I liked his interplay with Guillermo Mai. I think we haven't seen Guillermo Mai reach the heights of last season, and he's due a big performance. You know, for Auckland FC fans, the Port fans, today might be the day that they see Guillermo Mai start to click in, or even the big imposing presence of Sam Cosgrove, who hasn't got to grips yet with the A-League, it seems. So I'm going to tip the home team to win. You know, the interesting thing for me, doesn't seem as though the crowd are whipped into the frenzy that they were last year. There was 15,000 for the home opener last week. Conversation through the week this week is that it's below that at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, we thought with a long weekend last weekend, perhaps a few Aucklanders heading out of town, no excuse this weekend. Weather's looking beautiful. It's a team that are unbeaten so far, yet to concede a goal. So he's hoping for a big walk-up crowd to keep that momentum with Auckland FC positive in and around the City of Sails.
Yeah, I did look at that crowd, and I actually spoke to a few people who went to the game. They didn't believe there were 15,000 people there, and I don't want to sound negative. I think we had about 10,000 there, but that's a conversation for another day, because I really don't want to get in trouble with my friend Mr. Becker and Big Sugar Daddy Bill, because I want to be invited.
I'll say this. There was a lot more people at Go Media Stadium than there were on Sunday last week
in
Wellington.
Oh, yes.
And I think the Yellow Fever, you know, I think they were really ecstatic with that last gasp win.
Brilliant.
I think that'll inject a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of hope back into those supporters. And hopefully next time they are at home, which will be the derby, don't forget, there'll be a bigger crowd than we had in that match against Brisbane last weekend.
Absolutely, and of course, you know, I just think with the Phoenix that win, they came from behind to beat the Roar, and I felt it was great. Great, Connor Piper's playing some great football, and of course, they've got an interesting prospect. They're away at Central Coast, so you know what? I can see them at least getting a point out of this. I think this Phoenix side, I don't think they're going to be as easy as everyone thinks they are going to beat this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. There was a lot of signs to be enthusiastic about if you're a Wellington Phoenix supporter. I think Central Coast are also, they're a club that are in a little bit of disarray from previous seasons. They had a change of coach right on the eve of the season kicking off before the first round. Nick Montgomery has moved on. They've got a caretaker in Warren Moon, who's an experienced campaigner. But, you know, they won in round one, the F9 Derby, in the last minute. There was absolute scenes there in the first weekend. I tend to agree with you. I think this could finish a draw on paper. But there's a little nagging voice in the back of my head that suggests there's a little bit of momentum going with Wellington, and it's not the Wellington we saw last year. They've gone behind in their first two games and come back to get a result both times, a 2-2 draw against Perth in the distance derby, and then a 2-1 win last weekend against Brisbane. Eze hasn't quite found his feet. He's an interesting sort of a player, the Nigerian frontman that's been signed this year. Corbin Piper is playing some excellent football off the bench. I think that will be his role. But sad, you know, we talked about the All Whites earlier, sad to see Tim Payne succumb to what looks to be a broken collarbone, so he'll be out for a few weeks. So Isaac Hughes comes back in this week, which is good for Giancarlo Italiano. So look, I'm going to agree with you. I think I can see this one finishing a draw, but I would have the Wellington Phoenix maybe just ahead as favourites.
Yes, and it makes for an interesting next week, because I don't think we'll hear the chance of they will not get battered everywhere they go, this Phoenix side.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot more defensive reserve, stability back there. Although I will say, Mandraka James, the new Canadian centre-back, we're pretty disappointed for the way that he was out-muscled to concede that goal last weekend from Justin Vidic. I think he had it. He had the better of things, and he just got monstered a little bit by Vidic to put Wellington down 1-0. So they'll be hoping to be a bit tighter at the back this week.
Anyway, better move on, because we've got to get Mr. Galloway very soon. And, okay, Palace versus Brentford. Nottingham Forest versus Manchester United. Burnley versus Arsenal. They're the first three games in our EFL.
I'll make it easy for you. Arsenal beat Burnley, Man United beat Nottingham Forest,
yep,
and Crystal Palace beat Brentford.
Awesome, I'd agree on that. I have ticked all of those, and we agree. Hey, I reckon we're going to be fine. Then we go to Brighton versus Leeds, which is very interesting. Fulham versus Wolves, and of course, and the final two games for Sunday, Spurs versus Chelsea in a London derby, and then we have a Liverpool versus Aston Villa, and Liverpool really do need to get a win.
Oh, Liverpool have to win this game against Aston Villa. It's only match day 10, and Liverpool must beat Aston Villa to get the pressure off Arne Slot's back. So I am going to tip the Reds to win that one, but it's really dire stuff. It's almost shades of what Manchester United were going through last season, Eamon, in terms of what's happening at Anfield at the moment. They just don't seem to be able to click at the moment. So I won't spend too much time lingering on the point. I will tip the Reds to beat Aston Villa. Tottenham versus Chelsea, that London derby. Tottenham have got form. Chelsea were my pick at the start of the season, but they've sort of tumbled down to ninth place. So I'm going to back Tottenham to win that one. Fulham versus Wolves is a relegation battle already. I think Fulham have the advantage over Wolves there, who are bottom of the Premier League. And Brighton versus Leeds, I'm going to sit on the fence and say that ends up as a draw. Fighting point for Leeds, the team from Yorkshire.
Yeah, I actually think that ends up in a draw. Then we go to Monday now. West Ham fans, close your ears. West Ham versus Newcastle. Manchester City versus Big Bill, Sugar Daddy's AFC Bournemouth, and Sunderland versus Everton in a very interesting last match. But we go to that first one. Nuno's gone.
Is it even a conversation, Eamon? It's Newcastle.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, West Ham fans, but it's not looking good. And even they admit it. They've already sacked another manager. Who are you going to find next? Manchester City versus AFC Bournemouth. I can see this being a draw, big fella.
Yeah, I could go along with that. Bournemouth keep winning, though, up to second, their highest ever position in the Premier League. Look, I tipped Man City to win last weekend, and they got bundled over by Aston Villa. I don't think what it picks here, I don't think I'll get the result right, so I'll join you and I'll sit on the fence and say that's a draw, and hopefully one of those two sides gets the 3 points.
And, of course, Sunderland versus Everton. Now, many suggested that Sunderland would be going down this year. They're surprising everyone, and I just think they'll beat Everton at home.
Well, they've got the form. They're up to fourth place as well, sitting in a Champions League spot. Everton down in 14th. I think the Stadium of Light will be rocking again with 3 points for Sunderland. So it's a crazy topsy-turvy league, isn't it? But, you know, the fact that Bournemouth and Sunderland are occupying the Champions League places after 10 match days, fantastic. Fantastic for the casual fan, let's say.
It is, and I think it's been the CPL has been very, very interesting this year. So what we'll do next week, we'll catch up next week. We'll be doing this a bit earlier than expected, hopefully as a pre-record if you're available and I'm available. So you have a wonderful weekend, young man, and we will talk next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. Sounds good. We've got the derby coming up next weekend, and also a little good luck to the under-17 men who take part in the World Cup. They play Mali this Wednesday in their first round of matches there before taking on Saudi Arabia and Austria. So good luck to those young gentlemen representing New Zealand over there.
Hey, we always do well at underage footballs on this world scene, so good luck to them. Cheers, Seamus.
Nice one. Have a good weekend.
Cheers. That was Seamus Martin, the big guy. Good guy. Anyway, we'll speak to Garth Galloway next. Cheers, mate. Hey, okay.
Homegrown alligator, see you later. Gotta hit the road. Gotta hit the road.
Mate,
the sun ain't changing the atmosphere. Architecture, I'm familiar. I could get used to this. By in the yellow and green, stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. South of the equator, navigator, gotta hit the road, gotta hit the road. A deep sea diving round the clock, bikini bottoms, lager toes, I could get used to this. Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Hey, we're just going to talk a bit of cricket, and this is proudly brought to you by our sponsors at WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomatoes happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, a man who I always love having a bit of a chat about cricket as we head towards the third one day, New Zealand versus England, and we'll also be talking about the Women's World Cup, and just a quick preview of the Ashes. The one and only, probably one of the best cricket commentators in the country, possibly, and probably world class as well, too, Mr. Garth Galloway. Good morning. I had to say something nice.
Yeah, you did, Eamon. It's, look, I'm just taping it, recording it, and I'll keep it for posterity. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. This will just, the day was going well when I called, or when you called me, and it's just got even better. Hey, Garth, I have to say, Black Caps versus England, the first two one-day internationals, first one, England 223 all out, Harry Brooke 135, Overton 46, Zach Folkes 4 for 41. At one point we had England 10 for four, 10 runs and 4 wickets down, but then New Zealand comes back, does it quite easy in a canter. Mitchell 78, Bracewell 51, but I have to say that innings by Harry Brooke probably saved the English from disaster in the first international.
Yeah, and it was an incredible innings, really, when you look at the proportion of runs to the, to the overall total and the number of players that were falling around them. I thought probably as good a one-day innings as you'll see by anyone, really. Although I suppose, you look at the circumstances of the game and it's a series that probably doesn't mean a hell of a lot. England are trying to improve. Their record in 50-over cricket's been poor recently, and obviously Brendan McCullum's been brought in to try and change that. And I have to say that, from the first couple of rounds that we've seen, and it is early days, England have really struggled. It's curious because when you look at their side, they have plenty of good cricketers. They've come out of their domestic season, and it is surprising to see how much they're struggling. So the games haven't really risen to great heights. We haven't seen the run scoring fest. England have batted twice at first on both occasions and haven't really set high totals, and New Zealand have done well. I think New Zealand's bowling's been
brilliant.
Still some concerns, I suppose, around Williamson, Latham and Young, who are yet to get underway. It'd be nice to see New Zealand batting first today and looking to set a total and seeing if we can get some of those players who haven't quite got underway yet, given a good opportunity to spend some time there.
Absolutely, and of course Matt Henry is out for this match. Christian Clarke has been brought in to the Black Caps for the injury, the Northern District's seamer. So that'll be interesting whether he gets a run.
Yeah, it will be. Look, in a way, I hope he does. New Zealand have won the series. I was a little surprised to see Tickner being chosen for the second game, and I don't say that. I mean, he is a fantastic human being. He looks and clearly a very popular and a very good first class cricketer. I just thought in terms of the future, they might use the opportunity to bring in someone a bit younger, but they were right. Tickner performed very well for New Zealand in that second game, and obviously he should play again today. But it would be nice to see if they could squeeze Clarke in and to give them an opportunity in a match which, New Zealand will want to win the series 3-0, obviously, but they've won the series. They've got 2 out of 3. This is going to be the test, I think, for the coaching staff and things, whether they are prepared to give these young players a crack. And I really hope they do. I think that would send some good signals to the public.
Well, we've got the West Indies coming up next, and I think it's definitely a time that we need to start giving some of these younger players a go.
Yeah, look, it is. And I think, we've talked about, and I've mentioned ad nauseum probably for your listeners, those who tune in to,
To a quality show, to a quality show with two quality people.
To an absolute quality show with a great host. When we listen, I've talked about the Zimbabwe series and playing players like Devon Conway over there, Henry Nicholls. Why? You've got to look to Australia next year. Nicholls won't be playing in that series for New Zealand, and if he is, then New Zealand have got problems because it means that they're not, you have to have players, I think, who are better than Henry Nicholls, although he's been a very good servant for New Zealand cricket. So, as we've talked about, Mariu was the player who I thought they should have brought in that series. I hope they play him against the West Indies again. What you're seeing, and I think, I have been critical of Conway's selection in all forms of the games in recent times, and you're seeing now in the T20 series and the 50-over stuff that he's being left out. And so I think the writing is on the wall for him, and I think that's right in terms of his form across all forms of the game. Plus, he's a free agent, and no criticism of him for that. He's absolutely entitled to do what he likes. But I think, you know, for the test team and so on, I'd be looking to get in a younger player like Mario and giving him test experience with a view to what's coming up in the next couple of years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, then we look at this Women's World Cup. Well, you know, it does show the gap between New Zealand and other nations. If anyone had seen India chase down that total of Australia 338 all out, and India chased it down 341 for five with nine balls to spare, that was a fantastic match. And then South Africa, I didn't see this coming, Garth, absolutely destroyed England.
They were magnificent. I replayed these games while sitting and doing some work, and so I watched both games all the way through, and what an absolute treat. And look, and this is where I get grumpy about the way that New Zealand cricket talks about, or Sophie Devine talks about New Zealand being so unlucky, and so they lost to the top four sides. That means you don't qualify. You're out. You have to beat one of those four, and if you don't and you lose to all of them, then, you know, the mathematics is pretty obvious, provided that those other teams are still winning their games. We were very well beaten by all of those four sides who qualified, and the gap is becoming yawning in terms of you know, the skill set. Now, we don't have the resources that India, Australia and England have, and particularly their domestic competitions and so on are very strong. But also, when you look at the players, if anyone wants to watch an absolute masterclass in batting, look at Laura Volvart's 169 against
England.
Unbelievable. Support from Brett's 45 and Cap 42. But it was just an innings of extreme class. And you know, she averages 50 in one day international cricket. We do not have a player of her class in New Zealand. And then, you know, you saw just Marizan Kapp's opening spell, and she took 5 for 20 overall. She just exploited the weaknesses in the top order. She was just precision with Amy Jones, the way she bowled her, nipping one back between bat and pad. It was an extraordinary and surgical performance by her. And then, of course, the second game you talk about was the Australian women. 338, they said. Phoebe Litchfield, I think that's her fourth century. She's played 36 games, and that was her fourth century for Australia. You know, if we compare a player, Georgia Plimmer, for example, 31 games for New Zealand, 100 and not a single 50. You know, Litchfield's innings was one of pure class. And then, as you said, India, for them to chase it down, and Jemima Rodriguez and Harmapreet Kaur, their contributions were wonderful. You know, there is just a huge gulf between the top four, and I include South Africa in that now, the top four sides and New Zealand. And I worry greatly that unless there are some very honest conversations and the excuses get put to one side and the woe is me gets removed, then New Zealand are going to become very much a second tier women's cricket nation. And for too long, we've been fed stories about how many promising young players there are and so on. The thing I've been concerned about is I've just always heard excuses for poor performances. And what I would like to hear is we are not good enough and we have to improve, and not what we heard from Sophie Devine at the end of the game against India, where she said it's so tough because we've trained harder than any other team in the tournament. That just can't be right.
Absolutely. Anyway, Ashes coming up. I am looking forward to this, Garth. I'm looking forward to it. I know that we've got Test cricket, New Zealand versus the West Indies, but, you know, Boxing Day, and I'll be down in the beautiful Garden City for that, because I'm coming down for Christmas. But I'm looking forward to just watching cricket, listening to cricket, you know, because I love the Ashes. I love the Boxing Day Test. I just think this series is just going to captivate the cricket public, if not only in Australia and England, but also New Zealand, probably the rest of the world.
Yeah, look, well, I think I think it will, as I've said to you before, I think it will define Brendan McCullum's Test cricket coaching career. After that 2-2 draw with India at home this year, the Australian series is a huge one away from home. I think it's very interesting because you know, a lot of people are talking about the England Quakes and how good they are and that they're going to knock Australia over. And I think that's a very optimistic approach. I think England have got a reasonable side. But when you watch, I've just been watching Hazelwood in the 2020 series against India, and the sort of the way that he's been able to just dismantle the Indian top order in that form of the game. He's fiercely competitive. I know that Cummins is out in the first test, but they'll bring in Boland, presumably, you know, a metronomic bowler who's just able to put the ball in beautiful areas. They have Mitchell Starc. And then when you look at Archer, and he is a fine bowler, he's played 46 first-class games in 10 years. He hasn't played a first-class game since July, and I think he's played two in this year. And they're going to ask him to go over there and play in four tests, which is a year's workload for him. And Mark Wood as well has played so little cricket. Atkinson is still relatively inexperienced at international level. And of course, Bashir, the offie, while he is a wicket taker, he can be very expensive as well. So, it's going to be a fascinating battle. I can't wait for it like you. I do hope England perform well. I'd love to see them beat Australia. That's where my heart sits. But it's a hell of a task.
Absolutely. Well, Garth, much planned for the weekend ahead.
Off to Clearwater to play. I've got a sort of annual catch-up with six mates out at Clearwater.
Oh, great.
And I'll feed and water them in the evening at home, which will be good. Bit of power, bit of white bait, and a leg of lamb.
Oh, God, please don't do that. I've only had a salmon bagel today, which was lovely, but now you're making me hungry, Garth. As per usual, thank you for taking the call at the last minute, and thanks for all the good expert comments you always give, sir.
No problems. Cheers. Have a good one.
Yeah, you take care, Garth. Garth Galloway, he is just fantastic, isn't he? He's just one of the, I'm very lucky. Okay, so we've got a panel, and now number two we've got our second panellist, the old Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield. So I'm going to give the two gentlemen a call, and we're going to finish off the show with a good panel.
But don't look down,
'cause I'm on top of the world.
Take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, we come to the final part of the show, and a big thanks to all the sponsors involved: Father Ted's Original Irish Pub, Douglas Drainage, Force Electrical, Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson, an Epsom branch, and WaterSmart. So we might as well get into it. We have the panel on line one. He's bringing down the average age of the panel. The young fella, Mr. Sam Ackerman. Good morning to you.
Very good morning, mate. Hope things are well in your neck of the woods. I'm down here in Mount Maunganui and the sun is shining. It's gorgeous.
Absolutely
mate.
Brilliant. And we have the one and only Silver Tongue Silver Fox, or as he's known around here in the studio, Smooth Sean Summerfield. How are you, mate?
Turn it up. Hey, Eamon. G'day, Sammy.
Yeah, hey, just talking about Silver Tongue Silver Foxes, I was in town and I ran into the original Silver Tongue Silver Fox who you guys used to work, he used to read the news at TV3. Actually, he said hello to me, recognised me, because I dealt with him on a professional basis, not in broadcasting, but in what I normally do. So I said I'd pass on your regards.
Are you talking about Mike McRobert?
Absolutely.
Right, okay, because he wasn't always silver.
Yeah, but he had the voice. You're the sporting Silver Tongue, so he was the god Silver Tongue Silver Fox. Anyway, we better talk a bit of sports and not talk rubbish. In fact, the last time I saw him would have been at the Coro Land when I was flying out to Chicago, and we go to Chicago because it's the All Blacks versus Ireland, and I have to say, you know, everyone will be getting up first at 9 o'clock in the morning. They'll be going to have breakfasts, or people will be going to meet people's houses to enjoy this match. Sean, I think this match is going to be huge. It's sold out. I've got this feeling the All Blacks will just be too good. I think this Irish side's aging.
Look, I think you did on there, but the thing is, how can you discount this side? And you say they're aging, but you look at the rankings, that this will, I think, from my very rough calculations, could decide who's number two in the world. You know what I'm saying? So Ireland, yes, they might be aging, but they're still the third-ranked side in the world. And, you know, they haven't got, I guess, the player base to match other nations. That said, though, I still stick with the fact, guys, that if you look at Scotland, they're the most phenomenal nation for the number of rugby players and where they are in the world. But now back to Ireland, you know, don't discount the spirit, the energy.
Yep.
That said, though, you go the other way. The aerial game is phenomenal, but I think with the back three the All Blacks have selected, especially with Caleb, you'd have to say that they've got the selection to match them. I think with Quinn there in the centres, I think we've got a great back line. I'm more excited, strangely, about the back line than I am about the four pack. I don't know where you are, Sammy.
Sam, what's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the Irish may be aging, but that's a World Cup problem, not a 2025 problem for them. I don't look at that and go, well, you know, the big term picture for them is they need to start finding those combinations that they think will be there, much as, you know, Scott Robertson's been trying to work at along the last year and a half. But I think there's still a threat. I hate the concept of talking about, oh, they'll be rusty because they haven't, you know, it's their first test of their season. I said, yep, but yeah, taken to the other side of it, we're seeing it with a lot of sports at the moment. As the seasons get longer, the break these players have had, the All Blacks, and because they are breaks, they haven't been out there in NPC and rolling up the sleeves and getting dirty. It's been about getting some rest in before they play. It's the end of a tough year, and this is a tough test in a place where they're historically don't have a wonderful record. All I've seen on the social media from the All Blacks has been them at the Bulls game, going to the Bulls venue for a shoot-around. I think that Chicago and trips to the States in general are dangerous for New Zealand sporting teams because it's where these players would choose to go in their off-season. These are the things that they're interested in. You know, a lot of the a lot of people, but certainly a lot of athletes look at the NBA in such a glowing way that they can be distracted by what's there. I think it's a super dangerous game for the All Blacks. and they need to be switched on in a big way against an Irish side who, if they achieve nothing else this year but a win over the All Blacks, it's a big year for them. So no matter whether they've scragged a couple in the last few years or not, that's beside the point. A win over the All Blacks defines your season, and this Irish side are capable. I still think the ABs will get up. I love that. There have been four changes, but what those changes are, they were the people essentially who were out injured or unavailable for the last test against the Wallabies. This goes back to Razor picking what is he sees as his best available lineup, and I love that. I know that it's been deemed boring and unimaginative. I'm all good with it. I'd rather see him picking the team he wants on a regular basis than throwing people in and out. And Quincy Pye is a great example, Shawnee, as well, because he literally is in there on form. He earned his place in that team because previous to that, you know, Proctor was somebody who's been looked at very thoroughly as a long-term 13. But his effort against Australia was so undeniable, he is in that team. So I'm all about it.
And
hey, how about that, eh? Picking players on form and merit. What a revolution. But I just want to expand before you go there, Eamon.
Yep.
A couple of things about that Chicago game and expanding on what you said, Sammy. There is a feeling that it's like almost an exhibition game, and more so for the All Blacks than the Ireland, who have, there's a huge diaspora, the Irish, in Chicago. The support is all for them. And yeah, we saw in the part, all the Irish fans will be there singing Fields of Athenry. There'll be all sorts going on there. And I think, you know, that we can't underestimate, this is not a neutral venue. This is in my mind,
yep,
an Irish home game. And I think you're dead on, Sammy. I think, expanding on what you said, like their whole festival thing, that they're tourists as opposed to a team on a rugby tour. That's just, yeah.
And I'd have to agree with both of you. I was in Chicago the last time, and I have to say, you know, it's a wonderful city. The weather's perfect, and you can get lost in sort of those situations. You can see why the players, you saw them around eating pizza, doing, just being blokes, just enjoying themselves when probably the focus should be rugby. Anyway, we're going to talk a bit of rugby league, and of course, big weekend, of course, a big game on Sunday, two very, very big games at Eden Park, the Kiwi Ferns versus the Gillaroos, the Kiwis versus Tonga. I suspect there'll be a big red wave at Eden Park. They're talking possibly over 30,000 plus. And of course, on Saturday I was going through, as you do, my information device, and I got an alert from the Courier Mail in Brisbane. There is a possibility of State of Origin Game 2 2027 being held at Eden Park. Sam Ackerman, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, on the subject of Origin, I am, you know, I'm a leaguey, and the concept of one of the biggest spectacles in rugby league being brought here, of course I'm excited about it. It'd be fantastic. Eden Park, though, because part of the reason that it's here, and the reason that there's the reported $5 million being put in from the government, or a local government, whichever it is, I can't recall, putting in that money, is to bring the tourist dollars in, because there'll be a lot of Australians from, you know, New South Wales and Queensland coming in here. So I would say that potentially, of the 50-odd thousand Eden Park, we'd be lucky to get 30,000 of that being New Zealanders. I actually think there's a really huge chance of a massive influx of external supporters coming along. Great for the region, but yep, New Zealand sporting fans don't get as big an opportunity. Now, I'll be there with bells on. Don't you worry. You're yelling at all the maroon scum at every moment I get.
Oh, I knew you had class, Ackerman. Good on you.
I would, in a heartbeat, rather $5 million was spent on international rugby league and spent on getting more games and more opportunities for the Kiwis. Now, that's not a fair trade-off. I understand that that's an economic impact, but my point is the international game is so much more absorbing to me than what Origin is, and I'm so excited about this game. You're right, there'll be a sea of red, and if you have not, and this is everybody listening, if you have not experienced a Tongan rugby league crowd, you are selling yourself short. You need to get out there and be part of it, because it is unforgettable. I don't know anyone who's been and experienced it, anyone who has said that it is unparalleled to anything they've seen sporting-wise in this country. On the flip side, We can't sit back and let Tonga make this a home game. I want to see the red jerseys out there are great, the red flags. I want to see black. I want to see the Kiwi fans who have been sitting on their backside a little bit too much for my liking to get out there and make some noise, because this is an opportunity that we should not let pass for rugby league. And I can't wait. As far as the result goes, Tonga will be just... I've spoken to Christian Wolf this week, and he was an angry-sounding man, and that does not bode well. Tonga need to win by 17. They won't die wondering, and they will come right from the get-go. They can't afford a slow start. The Kiwis are a better side, in my opinion. I think the Kiwis get up, but the Kiwis won't forget that they got beaten by 1 point by Tonga in their last encounter in one of the great games of International Rugby League. They were down 24-0 at halftime. The Kiwis, they came back to make it 24-all before Katoa iced an ice cold kick, it was as well, drop goal to win that game. This is going to be an absolute cracker, and I cannot wait. And the Kiwi Ferns, by the way, being placed $8 outsiders at the TAB at home against the Gillaroos.
RA Team Bet responsibility, Bill Guys.
I was filthy. The disrespect for those Kiwi Ferns.
Yeah, well, I love to this.
I'm just going to say, Eamon, one of my favourite moments when Sam was in the newsroom together was bumped into the gear man for the Reds when we were in for the Maroons. Sorry, when we were in they were down for a State of O in Sydney. And I mentioned that, look, I had a colleague, our league reporter, who was the fervent Blues fan, and we needed to do something about it. And poor old Sammy was on his own, because everyone was a Maroon supporter. So he gave me every bit of gear. And I was quite delighted, because I've never been into sort of festive decoration, Sam, but I think I decorated your desk beautifully with Maroon gear, and it was one of the memorable moments of my time in the newsroom with you. I'm sure you cherished it.
I remember it quite vividly, and that newsroom caused me a lot of Origin pain, in fact. When I started, New South Wales was in a 3-series winning tier, and then I, as soon as I started at TV3 with all these Queensland fans, Eamon, there was a small drought of one title in 10 years. It was a tough time around Origin period, and geez, they could layer up. And you'll be pleased to know, Sean, I still have the Maroons ball tucked away, and the kids see it every now and then. They say, "What's that here?" I said, "It's a reminder of the you know what's I used to work with."
Yeah,
brilliant. But just on that, guys, taking a step away, I think a State of O game in Auckland would be an amazing spectacle, and for league as a whole, I think it adds to the show, and in the same way that we fell in love with the New South Wales Rugby League back in the late 80s, early 90s, when it was started to screen on TV2 and everything like that. So I think there is a real power in that. That said, Sam, obviously you're not in Auckland anymore, but driving around, I work as an Uber driver for my daughters on the weekend. And last night, everywhere I drive, especially down around Mount Wellington Way, there was parades of Tongan supporters with the big flags out of the vans, the minivans, with the rows of speakers on the roof playing that sort of Casio tone music. It was just hilarious. But yeah, the you cannot miss the fact for the whole week that Tonga are playing the Kiwis. It's amazing to see that colour and that passion.
It is, and I can tell you what, Sandringham Road, Dominium Road area, come 2 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow, it's going to be mobbed, absolutely mobbed. Kingsland will be mobbed. Hey, just on what we were saying about State of Origin, and I just want to grab both your opinions. Do you think it's time that with all the stadiums we've got, and isn't it time we had a New Zealand NRL round? What do you reckon? Sam?
No. The thing I've heard, guys, is that because Eden Park isn't still rugby and cricket, is still like the landlords or whatever it is, that's why there would never become a base for the league team, and that was why there was the strength for the downtown stadium that actually worked like the Parramatta or whatever for the game in New Zealand. Obviously, Carlisle Park became car park for a while and then whatnot, so I think a big neutral venue is the way to go, but obviously they seem to be believing Eden Park's the way. But Sam, I don't know what you've heard, but I've heard that there is that historic thing that League does not want to be a tenant of rugby and cricket.
Well, just before you get on to Sam, but what I'm saying is, with an NRL New Zealand round, it doesn't have to be in Eden Park. It could be spread right across the country. So, Sam, watch it.
It'll be in Christchurch in a couple of years, boys. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. I know. And it's going to be closer than we expect. Sam.
It's a great idea. I mean, there's no question in the world. Unfortunately, the NRL think they've paid us back for sacrificing so much as a league public for a couple of years with nothing being played here and what the Warriors did for the game. They think they paid us back by giving us a pre-season game of the All-Stars versus the Māori All-Stars. Indigenous All-Stars, pardon me, versus the Māori All-Stars at Rotorua. That was their view on getting level. So don't hold your breath. I love the concept, but I don't think that they personally, being the NRL, make enough money out of it. I couldn't agree more, and most clubs would say they're down with it, but it's not how it's going to work out best in the eyes of the broadcasters and the eyes of the NRL as well.
Anyway, we move on. Sean Liam Lawson, possibly at the crossroads as he looks to his future in Formula One. Obviously, some news coming out that Yuki Tsunoda could be moving to IndyCars, which will probably relieve a bit of pressure for Liam. But, you know, I felt sorry for him in Mexico. That the marshals are still blaming Liam Lawson when it wasn't his fault. Just your thoughts on where Liam's at?
Oh, well, let's be honest. I mean, Liam's never going to be the most popular guy in Mexico. So the Mexican Motorsport Authority is having a go at Liam, but the FIA has said no. It was the marshals who were at fault. They should not have been released onto the track. Liam didn't hit them, and you heard his reaction to it. And I think he's totally clear. So don't even worry about the bollocks out of Mexico. You know, they're completely sort of outranked by FIA, so forget that one. As for Yuki, and I've been saying it for a while, he is a Honda driver. That's what's kept him alive, because Honda were the engine supplier for Red Bull, but it's under a Ford badge next year. There's the theory, I think the Herald sniffed it out, that Liam's been doing all this filming with Ford, which bodes well for next year. Why would they invest in him? Actually, I want to share something with you guys right now that I haven't actually repeated to anyone.
Okay.
At the Aussie Grand Prix this year, we were there with a whole bunch of guests, and we were trying to get some gear, give them, and I was looking for Liam Lawson gear. And one of the Aussie guys serving at the concession stand said, oh, there's no Liam Lawson gear. This is when he was Red Bull. They didn't want to make it because he's not going to be there for long. And I was like, Ooh. Wow. And I thought, is that just an Aussie guy being a prick because they're still hurting about Danny Ricciardo? Or was there something else to it? Now, strangely, this bloke was dead on, so I don't know what was said, because they never bothered to make any Liam Lawson Red Bull gear. Now, so that was quite interesting. So I think the way the Herald have seen Ford thing is quite good. I think Yuki being talked about, with the smoke, there is always fire with Formula One. I thought Yuki might become the reserve driver at Aston Martin, but mate, if he drives to Dale Coyne with a Honda powered car and IndyCars, pretty good lifestyle. Ask Scott Dixon. But I think Liam deserves another season, but he's got to get some good results. He's not that far behind Isaac Hadjar, but Isaac Hadjar is a find. He has taken it and run with it. So I would put 90% chance of him being in the other Red Bull car next year. And I would put 80% that Liam's set for one of the seats in Racing Bulls. And let's be honest, they're pretty competitive this year. And they are reasonable. There's no reason why they couldn't be top five team.
Yep, absolutely. And Sam, Joe Parker, sadly got beaten by Fabio Wardley in the 11th round. What's ahead on points? Do you believe that Joe is possibly at the crossroads when it comes to his career?
boxing is the craziest sport in the world, where losing can suddenly put you in a better position. So he had mandatory fights locked in, and they got passed over. Now, obviously, I think I'd much rather have seen him beat Wardley, because Wardley's now in a great position to get that fight. But by being somewhat more quote-unquote vulnerable and not looking like as big a threat as he would have potentially otherwise because of the loss, who knows, it could open a big money fight for him in other shapes and forms. At the stage of his career, yep, it could certainly be an issue. That said, we've heard this before, that he was at a crossroads and he was never going to be there. If he doesn't get another world title shot, he's still going to retire as an excellent, excellent heavyweight. And arguably, and I know I'm a massive David Tua fan, but results-wise, the best of this generation. What he's been able to achieve for New Zealand, amazing.
And a hell of a nice guy to boot.
I think he's a lovely guy, and I think he has big fights in his future. I don't think he's done. He's still in great shape. It was an unfortunate call. And do you know what? I'll tell you what is going to do him absolute wonders. He took that defeat and the call that most boxers in the competitive industry would be jumping up and down at and trying to deflect and make sure it looks like they got robbed because they had their ego bruised. He said, look, I don't think it should be stopped, but I'm not the ref. I trust him to make the call, and I'll wear it. That's the way it should go.
Absolutely.
Was his purse about $5.5 million anyway? It's not a bad loss, is it?
I don't think if you gave me $5.5 million, well, I wouldn't be stepping into the ring. Well, I'll step into the ring with Sam for $5.5 million.
Mate, I'll tell you what, Eamon, if any of us were in the ring with either of those fighters, there'd be two hits.
No, I just wouldn't even do it.
I'll tell you, two hits. Him hitting us and us hitting the ground. That'd be it.
I think if I was offered $500,000 to fight McIver, I probably would, because I'd probably back myself on that. But no, not any of those guys.
Shots fired.
Yeah, I should have. And hey, Stephen, no, he's a good, hell of a good bloke, old Steve. But yeah, but I'll say it right now. It's you wouldn't get me in there. Hey guys, just finishing off. Good comeback by our netballers. We'll just go with you, Sean. Happy with the comeback?
What? Nolene's comeback?
Nolene's comeback and the team's comeback. Yeah.
Yeah, look, it was sort of poetic. I mean, this whole chapter has just been, it's been like a horror show to watch. It's just embarrassing. I just don't get how people can just be so dumb in the way things are handled. And they let out stuff they shouldn't let out, don't say the things they should say. But it was sort of poetically, it was a nice way to finish that tight, because I think, you know, Aussie were the worthy team to take it, but a sort of heroic comeback. And let's be honest, if they'd run away with the series, it would have probably put more against Dane Noling Toro, I guess. I don't know. But as I said, it put a bit of a stink on the whole series. I have a huge amount of respect and time for Toro. I think she's an amazing woman, an amazing coach, and I'm going to be old-fashioned here, but we need to harden the heck up, because if we don't think that the top teams in the world aren't coached hard and played hard, we're bloody dreaming.
Okay, we have to...
Eamon will be back with the...